All right. Hey, thanks again for joining us for another episode of Triple Play. Please remember to
like and subscribe.
Almost caught you drinking.
No.
Almost. So. All right. So like and subscribe. Keep helping us out with that. Continue to get the word out there. We appreciate that. And continue to support those that support and help us. Remember our man, Andy McCollum with Resource One. If you got any financial needs, they're the folks to do it. Their number is 636-458-1798. And they would love the opportunity. I know a lot of people have been asking about the banking stuff going on right now. Hey, great time to talk to those guys. They're professionals. They'll help you through it and figure out if you need to make a move or not. Number two, our intro, outro, the soon-to-be-coming website, which looked pretty good the other day when we were checking it out.
Yeah.
You can give CS Design and Chris, our man there, at 573-436-3717 a call. Once again, that's 573-436-3717. They're putting together an amazing website. I'm really excited about that getting live here shortly. So on top of that, you'll notice we got a great guest today. And today we are meeting with Kyle. Kyle is doing a unique ministry. You'll notice his shirt, Score International. Score International does sports camps, but we're going to learn a lot more. I don't want to give away a whole lot, but Kyle, it's great having you here today.
Hey, thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
I don't know about being great, but I know God is great.
God is great.
Amen. Amen.
Yeah, and you do this ministry with your wife, Shannon. And so how long you guys been doing SCORE?
So we've been with SCORE going on 8 years now. SCORE, so you can see that I'm repping SCORE. So SCORE stands for Sharing Christ, Our Redeemer Enterprises.
Okay.
And so it's a ministry that got started by college coaches out of Chattanooga, Tennessee. I think they were down at Tennessee Temple.
Yeah.
And those guys had a heart for the Lord. They had a heart for discipleship, and they were coaches, college basketball coaches, and later you had other coaches that came on board. And without going into too much details, you know, they believe in the model of evangelism and discipleship. That was their big model. And so I want to fast forward all this because a lot of the information, if people can go to the SCORE International
site and find out about them.
They'll find out all the details about it. But what happened over the years, the ministry has grown. And so now you have various components of the ministry that exists. So under the SCORE umbrella, you have missionaries like myself and my wife that are involved in doing outreach and ministries and that are connected with the local church, right?
Okay.
That is an extension. They, in essence, become an extension of the local church in that outreach and with the gifts that God has given them. So you find these missionaries that are doing work in medical ministries and outreach, construction, clean water, anti-human trafficking, sports, church plants, and the list goes on and on.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, and so SCORE becomes a sending agency to those people, to the missionaries, and they help with mobilizing teams, either individuals or athletes or physicians, nurses, those type of people that are able-bodied, willing, and people groups to come in, assist the missionaries in doing kingdom work on the ground.
Mm.
That sounds well-rounded.
Yeah.
I was thinking the same thing. I was like, that's a lot.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They're everywhere.
The one thing that's very, very key with SCORE, and you see this with really good, solid ministries, is above all, our focus is on sharing the gospel.
Mm.
So we receive a team, we're going to be sharing the gospel. We go out into the community, we're sharing the gospel.
Okay.
We always will always share the gospel. And so that was one thing that Shannon and I had a passion for, is sharing that truth to our community. And so without getting into it now, and I'm sure we'll probably talk a little bit later.
Yeah.
One of the things that we saw was the need for people to hear that truth, receive that truth, but God needed those that he wanted to use and the platform of sports to share that truth of what Jesus Christ did on the cross, his death, burial, and resurrection.
Mm.
And so we saw the great opportunity to go and convey that truth to the kids, the next generation that was coming up all throughout our region, and not only throughout our region, here in the St. Louis area, inner city, rural, but we also took that same message of God's word to other parts of the St. Louis metro, bi-state. We took it to regional, to we go out to the south, we go out to the east, we take it out to the west. We've even gone up to where Fundamental LDS, where Warren Jeffs was, up in Mormon country. We've been in those areas and sharing the gospel. We've taken it overseas internationally. So we've lived out an Acts type of ministry as a part of one of the things that we did in our lifetime.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So now, we got into it a little bit earlier. You're talking a little bit about your background, because I think it's interesting, because you said sports was kind of a thrust. So give us a little bit about you and how sports played and kind of how you got into SCORE International, you and your bride.
So on the sports side, both my wife and I are athletes. We came up playing high school athletics, and it was the one thing in our lives. So if anybody knows anything about Lafayette, Louisiana, you know, baseball, you know about Ron Guidry's from out there. So you got a southpaw. He lived up in Cameron Crowe, where my dad and my family grew up. You know about a lot of people that came up on the sports side that are from that area. So there was a talent draw from that area. So, and naturally, I saw myself as the next talent coming up. It was by default. We all have to identify with the fact that I'm the next guy to step up. And so we both, we had that environment that we came up in. There was one thing we did back in town. You either do a little shrimping, crawfishing, or doing things off the Gulf Shore, because we were 30 minutes or so from the Gulf. So we did a lot of fishing. And then the other thing outside of that was either you go hang out with the wrong crowd, or you go play basketball, baseball. We didn't have soccer back then. We don't do soccer in the South.
Well, you need a lot of grass to play soccer.
You need a lot of grass. Yeah. We didn't have. I don't want to come against my brothers and sisters who do the soccer stuff. But you know, I don't have that skill set. The embellishment of when you get somebody gets hit and you all of a sudden it hurts. It really hurts.
Yeah, you can't.
I didn't say it.
Well, that's what it is.
I saw an embellishment.
It's acting.
Well, yeah. Gesticulations, they call that.
Even the grass down in New Orleans, so it's like a little spiky, so you don't be running on it too much.
No. And we didn't have hockey either.
We didn't have hockey.
Basketball, baseball, and football. And so you look at the SEC, and what do you see down there?
Yeah.
Dominance.
Yeah.
So I figured I might as well fit in. So... And so that is a mindset of where you grew up, right? And exceptional dominance and exceptionalism. And so, but I felt that I had the skill set. My wife, she had the skill set, very well talented in what she did as she ran track, but later decided not to run track and did instead cheerleading. But then, so she stayed in her lane, did what she did. I, on the other hand, baseball was my life. Everything about baseball. I was that good, and there was no one that I envisioned that was ever going to be better than me. Never. That was a mindset. You have to have that.
Yeah. And what was your position?
First base.
First base. Now, your sons. I know your sons play.
So sons play, yeah. You want to fast forward that for another?
No, that's okay. I just noticed that you played first. They also play baseball.
So yeah,
that...
one played first. One played. No. One. I had my southpaw, Case, my lefty. He was pitcher. He was the youngest. Okay, so he played first base and pitcher. I had my second born. He played, and doing it in reverse order. He played shortstop. He was always up the middle. He was like a vacuum cleaner. And he was most athletic. And then we had my other son. He played catcher. So this dude was, he was off the charts. But we had three boys that played baseball, three boys that played soccer, three boys that played basketball, football. So they were well-rounded kids, and they were just kids. They loved to go hunt, do all these types of things that kids would do.
Yeah.
Climb trees, those types of things. But yeah, that's what happened. So it passed on down. So the gene pool from Shannon and I passed on down to our kids. And so a quick story with that, and very short. I walked away from the game, right? And that was a bad part of the game because what happened to me back in the day, I because of misdirection and not being connected with stuff that happened at home with Dad, I rebelled, right? And it happens.
Right.
It was a part of my life that I regret, but now I've looked beyond, moved beyond because of the timing of all these things happen in our lives. And what happened, I decided to walk away from the game to spite my dad, right? I didn't have that connection, but that became a part of my testimony in life and what happened. Mm. And so the decisions I made were not honoring not only to God, but were disrespectful to my parents and how I made decisions and choices in life choices, life decisions. And so what happened was I walked away from the game and looked at other venues or opportunities to exhibit all this energy for this energy that I had. So I rode a bicycle professionally. So I did that. So I was with a team out of Lafayette, Louisiana. So I did that as a young amateur. Did that for a bit. My best year, I placed third. I no lower than third, and I made $2,500 that year, which was at the time the cost of my bicycle back in the 80s.
Bicycles are expensive.
My bicycle back in the day was custom-made Italian. It was a top-of-the-line you can buy, period, outside of one that was by Lance Armstrong at the time was $10,000. So in today's numbers, my bike would probably be worth about $20,000 plus.
That's incredible. Yeah. It's a car.
It is a car.
That's incredible.
Back in the guess where that bicycle is right now?
You're asking the same question to yourself too.
Yeah, it's in my garage.
Okay, there it is.
I can't let this thing go.
I thought you were going to say you had no idea where it was.
It's like collector's cars, man. This thing is at some point is going to have an appreciative value. Oh, yeah,
absolutely. Vintage.
My wife says it ain't going to happen.
That's when you tell her just wait and see.
Bring it. right. So I still have that bicycle hanging in the garage, but I have to figure that one out, what to do with it. But it's a one-of-a-kind custom-made type deal. So did bicycle, and then so didn't make much money cycling. And I said, wow, this is the life that I'm going to live. You know, baseball is gone. Working at Cookie Company or working at Kmart, that wasn't my dream, but was living it. Being on college campus, being free-spirited, playing video games, didn't have as much traction for me, you know, because you step away from all the other things and now you try to figure life out. And then Shannon came into my life. And when she came into my life, for which I decided I wanted to shift my life in something more meaningful, I said, I want to go to med school. All right. So my thing is, I'm going to wipe everything out, start fresh, but I need to have that level of focus. And I didn't know where to go, so I signed up in the military.
Okay. There you go.
And I said, dude, you got to get your life together. Bottom line. And so because there was a gap, there was something missing in what we call the teacher, the discipleship, that type of structural type component that's normally in place at some of and this is going to come into focus when we go through the entire story.
Yeah.
It's going to come into focus when everything comes together of why God gave me the passion to do what I do today. So I needed structure. I needed a foundation. I needed vision. I needed context. I mean, everything.
Right.
Because everything was just fuzzy, gray, aimless. It didn't have any prop value. What I considered value proposition for me, it was no meaning of things that I really cared about, you know, as a kid, as a young man.
Yeah.
And so I signed up in the military, enlisted. They tested me. They says, "Wow, you're all the charts." They said, "What would you like to do?" I said, I want to go 11 bang bang. I want to be infantry. He says, no, brother, not you. You're pretty smart. And they said, well, we got these other options. You can sign up and go into this other area, which I think at the time it was a $3,000 sign-up bonus. And I'm like, yes.
Bike paid off.
$3,000 sign-up bonus. How much did I make my 1 year where I really killed it in cycling?
$2,500.
Yeah. I did the math quick.
Yep.
I have a logic mind. And see it, and I'm like, sign me up. And I didn't know about taxes at the time. You know, so the government takes how much?
50% these days.
A lot, 50, a lot. 75% yeah. taxes, and all of a sudden that $3,000 goes down to about $1.50, yeah. right? But they got me on the number, so I took it, signed up, went in, and it was right about the time that I met Shannon. There was a story behind that. That's another podcast, or another time.
We can do part two, three, you four, you can do part three.
Yeah, how she stalked me.
All right.
And I avoided her. Yeah, when you see a picture of my wife and you see us back in the day, and it's like, why'd you avoid her? I said, dude, I was focusing on med school. I remember what my life was like before. Now I realize, dude, you got to get your life together. You got to get it together. You got to come together.
Right.
Because it's about, you know, you're 20-something or you're 20 or at 19. You got to get your life together. Pick out the pieces quick. And I didn't want any type relationships with anything, but my relationship wasn't even with God at the time. My relationship was about, all right, you moved out of the relationship with Stealth. You are still in a relationship with Stealth, but now you want to say, I want to sanitize my relationship environment, and that includes members of the opposite sex, everything. All I want to do is just focus on the books, right? Mm. And then she came into my life, like, again, that's going to be part two. And I said, I don't want to deal with women in relationships. And she stalked me for a year and decided this is the time that she needs to make her move on me. And I said, even when she came and made a move on me, I was like, well, I don't know.
I mean, it sounds like your planning worked out, though.
Hey, turned out all right.
Yeah, that's how you do it. So she came into the life, and then long story short, we became a couple. I told her I just signed up in the military, and I was being discharged like a few months later. And a few months later, because we met in April, I was being discharged. Heading off a basic, I think in June or so. And then from that, we started that relationship. And that was back in 1986.
Mm.
1986. And so we've been together in relationship as a couple, married in 1989, and then fast forwarding all the way up to today, present. So we've been married over 33 years. Hey, don't quote me on the date, right? Don't quote me on the number of years.
Yeah, hey, I'm not.
I know how to
I
add.
I know I'm getting it wrong.
But when you go over how many years you've been married, when you go beyond 1 year, you kind of lose.
Yeah.
It gets fuzzy because he says, never forget the date, right? So I know the date that we were married.
That's good.
For the record, December 16th, 1989. But beyond that, hey, it's bliss.
30 plus. Just say 30 plus.
Plus. 33 yeah. plus or whatever. Yeah.
You know what I did?
What?
I got married in 2000, so all I got to think about is what year we're in.
Easy.
And then I know what I've been married 22 years, soon to be 23 this year.
Class.
I know the day, too, because it's the day is actually same day as Amy's birthday. So Amy's birthday is the 28th, and so I just got her fast forward 4 months later, and I'm at October 28th. And
I wasn't that smart. I'm serious.
You have to remember three things just to remember the one date. You can just remember the date. Right?
There you go.
I'm a simple dude. You know, I am, but I'm not that smart like you are.
I don't know if I'm smart. That was all God stuff.
No, so, man,
I mean, I had to meet her. We got married in 1 year.
Think about that. I mean, just think
she
about
chose
when you were probably 3 years old. You were thinking, I think I'm going to get married in 2000.
Maybe.
That's him.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, what's your IQ?
God knew what you needed.
I know. It has to be up there. For, I mean, for people that think that way.
I just say God works miracles. So I got somebody way over my head. So my IQ is high. Hers is much higher.
That was your proposal. You know, you just met your wife, Amy, and then you says, you know what? We're going to get married on this year in this date. She's like,
I did. Our first date, I did tell her our first date that I thought that I was going to want to marry her.
In 2000.
You told her that?
Yeah, yeah.
In 2000.
Yeah, I was 25. I wasn't playing games anymore. I'd been single for a while, and she came in, and we were, I'd gotten to know her through the small group. So the story was with us is I had a friend of mine who invited me to do some flag football, and all my roommates were gone that weekend. So I went and played, and she was there, and I kind of thought, okay, this is cool. And then as the Rams are going towards the Super Bowl, one of the gals in our small group was friends with her. And I said, why don't you invite her to our little get-togethers while we're watching the playoff games? So she invited Amy to all the playoff games as our small group at church got together. And so we started talking and talking.
In 2000.
That would have been 99, 2000, yeah, because those were the Rams going to win the Super Bowl with Kurt Warner and all that.
Mm. 2000.
Yeah, it was 99, 2000 season. And
we moved here in 2000.
And so we...
2002.
I was going to say, now you got an easy... 2002. And easy math. How long you been here?
So yeah, the Rams won in February, and so that was when I told Amy around that time that I thought we had our first date, and I was going to marry her. And by October, we were married.
Mm-hmm.
1 year.
Bliss. Look at you.
Yeah, man. She's all right. I'm married way over my head. You got
no, no. She's better than all right.
That's right.
You know that.
Yeah, I do know. That's why I said I'm married way over my head. I did okay.
That's why you got a wingman right here on your right-hand side.
That's right.
I'm just saying. Better than all right.
Yep.
Exceptional.
Did when you got into score, did Shannon come with you? Did you guys start that together? Did she come into the fold later?
Yeah. Thanks for pulling it together. So what happened? So there was a lot of a backstory, you know, how all this stuff, you know, looked at me in the background, because I said something is going to come back full circle when I talked about, because mm-hmm. you have to pick on some pieces of what life was like back in the day. And I'll be very quick with this in 60 seconds. So came back, met my wife. I also went into combat. So I went to the Gulf War. On my 1 year anniversary, so December 16th of 1990, we married in 89. December 90, we were on a plane, one way ticket to the desert, and we were supposed to be in a rear position, always supporting the team because I was with the MASH unit, Mobile Army Surgical Hospital. I didn't go into all my background, but I was...
Sounds medical.
It is medical. Yeah. And so I had a knack for science, knack for medicine. And when I went to military, I took on MOS, working as a pharmacy specialist.
Okay.
91 Quebec. When I met my wife, a lot of... I'll save that for part,
part two.
I'll save it for part two.
Well, we can go over that.
So what happened was... got to the desert, came back from the desert with Victor, but there was a lot of other stuff that happened because while I was there, messed me up, and my mind shifted. Everything shifted, mm-hmm. and I do mean everything shifted. It changed me as a man. Military made me, turned me into a man, but the war, what I was doing, where I was, and the exposure, contact time during the time that I was there, completely obliterated me. I was just wiped out, and the things that I got exposed to and what I experienced. And so I came back a different man. It changed me. And so I had a focus. I had a different level of focus from the man that I was 3 years ago, the man that I was 6 years ago. I was a completely different man, but I had a focus then. I said, okay, I'm going to get through school, but I had this hypervigilant ambition at the time. I thought I was the stuff back in high school, but now I had a vigil. I had an edge.
Mm.
And so I came back in 91. Between 91 and 96, I just focused in on excelling in college, being at the top of my class, and above all, being a competitor, being something that I never thought that ceiling ever existed, which I said, this is my world, and I would go and control that. And so I got to that next level, graduated from college, also got my doctorate in pharmacology, and I had a padded resume. I had a padded presence about who I was, and I had people academically and also corporately banging on the door says, we want you, we want you, we think you're the great fit. You know, there were a lot of things that were lining up for me. And I said, finally, there's recognition for who I was as a young black man coming up where you didn't have that type of affirmation mm-hmm. back in the day. You didn't have that in the household. You didn't have that culturally in the South. You didn't have that academically. You didn't have that in academia. You didn't have that corporately. A lot of these things, there were gaps, and there was no preparation for what that life would be like. But I finally received affirmation, and I grabbed hold of the tail of that lion. And I said, I'm going to not only grab hold, but I'm going to ride it. Mm. And that was the mentality that I had and the type of ambition that I had. And it also, when you have that type of ambition, a lot of people can relate to that, who are type A, alpha driven people, over ambitious people. That is just adrenaline, and you're just gonna. It's nothing else in the tank but pure adrenaline, but that can be extremely dangerous because remember you don't have the structure, you don't have the balance, you don't have the discipleship, and you don't have God because you are God,
right?
It becomes an idolatrous proposition for anyone who is given that much power mentally without having checks or balances or mentors, disciple makers in your life. So for what happened during that portion of my life, I came into the context of a corporate environment, and I was given these opportunities to rise up quickly, which I quickly took advantage of it, given broad exposure, which I took advantage of all those things. I'll fast forward what happened throughout almost a 20-year corporate career. I excelled in that career, not only in my own mind, but also on paper. I also made a lot of mistakes corporately, as we all do in life.
Sure.
Because we didn't have the guidance, we didn't have the structure, we didn't have the balance of knowing who our God was in our life. We were our own God. Money was our God. Power was God. So, and not only that, but I didn't have the context of understanding what all that meant in the form of being a Christian. One thing I want to add, just fill in. When I came back from the war, I was in an absolute mess in 91, 92. And it was in 92 I was led to Christ. I accepted Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior. And because I got on my knees and I needed someone, and someone was that relationship with Christ, which I didn't see. I know I cried out to God when I was in the desert, when I knew that I knew that I knew I was going to die. I knew absolutely without certainty I was going to die. But I woke up the next morning, and I didn't even understand what that grace was.
Mm.
It's like somebody putting a gun to your head, pulling the trigger, like click, 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 and nothing comes out, but the clip is full. You know, that was God. So that happened to me. So you were out in the desert. Those things happened. It impacted your life. Yeah. You didn't understand it, but you cried out to him. And then you fast forward, you come back to the States. You're still in a state of darkness, spiritually. Physical darkness, and then all of a sudden you say, I need someone because I'm still swimming in a cesspool of filth, darkness, and pain and toil, and that's what it was like, and I need a rescue, and that was Jesus Christ, but I didn't know about him because of the religion that I grew up in. I grew up one of this orthodox religion that was just traditions, all these other things that come about in your life, and you think, oh, that's the way to God is by the things you do, but not about a personal relationship, which it did happen. And when I did have that, then there was no discipleship that went on. It's like, oh, okay, all right, so I made that decision to follow Christ. Okay, so that means what? Right? So remember, all these pieces are going to add up when you start connecting the dots.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm adding some up in my mind.
Right? And so,
because
you guys understand some things now, why did you, and why are you doing, and you'll see, now like Paul Harvey would say, now you know the rest of the story.
I love that.
Yeah.
So what happened corporately? I lived out. I considered a blessed career financially. My exposure, what I learned, what I've been given, and the people that I've met. I mean, it's I can't quantify that. But what I do know is that God didn't make a mistake in what I did. And then, in about 10 years ago, 9 years ago, how I got into ministry was I was in between jobs, and God just put a heavy burden on my heart for kids. Because I saw something, because my kids were, I say this with humility. My kids had an exceptional talent about them that was passed on down from mom and dad.
Yeah.
All right. Genetics, it plays a role. They had it. I was in denial of them actually wanting to do the things that they want to do, but I supported their dreams. But they excelled and they separated themselves. Mm. And I was like, you know, rolling my eyes and right. says, okay, because my job, it was about my brand, which was me, Incorporated, exceptional CEO, all these other things. And the family, the look was a part of the package, not the fact that I had to spend time with my sons and my wife and all these other things, right?
Gotcha.
You see that? You see how it's, everything is kind of, you're putting all this stuff, it's like a big jambalaya.
So right now, what you're saying is you're living like, honestly, probably 90% of the people in the church. They go to corporate world, they live their lives, but they're not engaged in a relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ.
No.
So. Well, that's everybody, just not all the time. Yeah. Everybody, yeah. We got good days, we got bad days, right?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, and right now, to be quite honest, in the context of this this type of platform where we're able to share this discussion, there is so much, because I'm, you know, 50-something odd years old, right?
Right.
There's so much, and I've done so much in my lifetime. It's hard to kind of pull it together in 1 hour. Mm-hmm. Someone once told me, hey, you need to write a book. I'm like, no. I'm living out what God has called me to do.
Mm.
Right. And so again, I can probably fill up a series for you guys. And if we can kind of take it that way,
yeah,
we can kind of do it that way.
Oh, yeah. We're all for it. We'd love to have you back.
It's up to how big you want to.
Yeah,
I don't know.
We can dig deep. I got questions I can ask.
I don't know. I could tee it up so we can see what happens.
Well, let's just talk about you're going to Honduras. Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, I'd say even let's rewind just from Honduras. So you got involved in Square Ministry, and we were kind of getting into how that all. So how did that calling? You said that you were there. How did that calling kind of come about?
So in between jobs, I had an opportunity because I had a heart for youth that had where sports became an idol. And we saw that here in our area, in the St. Louis area, especially on the baseball side. I saw it on the sidelines, but I was ignoring it. But God says, there's a problem. What's the solution, right? So it weighed heavy on me. So that burden of problem solution, because I spoke it incorporately, but I didn't apply it here in our lives. And then in 2013, I went on a mission trip, went to Dominican Republic, and I thought, wow, you know, here's an opportunity. But I was so intimidated to be out there in Dominican Republic because, one, I was humbled. Understand I had some exceptional talent at home with our kids, and I was like, wow, this is going to be some cool stuff, bringing one of my kids who I thought and I knew he had a high ceiling in his career, his life, and God can take him somewheres to have that level of exposure. And so I went down there with him, but I became humbled, and it radically changed my life and my mind because I saw the type of person that I was back then and the kids that were there then. Their whole hope was lined up and wrapped up in the idolatry of the game. Nothing else.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There was nothing else that brought them more joy than the game. Food, all this other stuff, they were totally affected or dissociated from the fact that they were poor, but they were rich in talent, rich in pride, rich in all these things. And it was the one thing that was going to get them out of, I call it the hood, or the bates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the bates.
Or what's going to get them out of there? right? Wasn't going to get them off the island. It was what you brought to the table before the age of 15. And I respected that. But I also understood what it meant for if, for anyone that studies that and knows that they've been there and understand what it's like in for a player in the Dominican or for someone in athletics, whether it be international football, hockey, what dedication it takes to get to that next level, and it's forever becomes your identity. It becomes inseparable from the proposition of the person that you are as a kid all the way to this point. Mm-hmm. Guess what happened to me when I was a kid? I made the same identity. You did. You know, we had this grand view of life, right, but we didn't have the balance. And so while I was down there, my mind quickly shifted, and I says, wow, I see myself in them. And then I saw that same problem that I saw here in St. Louis kind of replaying itself. Now what are you going to do with what you saw in the depravity of man? You saw a brokenness. You saw the self-fulfillment of your own prophecy, and you forgot about who God was through this whole entire process. Where was your God? Why? Well, I can see my God in what I can show off and flex and flash in everything that I do athletically or in professional. Well, God said, that's why I called you into ministry. And so I came back. My eyes were open. The scales were removed. My heart was ripped out of my chest. And I saw something that I had never experienced before. I saw in my mind the brokenness by which Christ had for his people that led it to believe in the fact that he came down to this earth to save those people from those false gods, to give them hope through the message, through the blood by which he came into this earth to do. And he did it. It was the application of the word came and manifest here on this earth. And I said, wow. I said, so Kyle, in so many words, having this conversation with myself and then going to God, I said, wow, what does this mean?
Yeah.
All right. So I'm a very introspective, and I always think through things. Wow, what does this mean? Well, what it means is you're going to have to walk away from corporate life. You're going to have to walk away from fame, fortune, and all these other things that go on in life.
Right.
To do what? To serve God. I says, wait a minute. I said, God, do you know what type of house that I live in? Do you know how many vacations I take internationally with my kids? Do you know who I am, God? Do you know my degree that I have, God? Did you see my perfect family, God? Do you see the fact of where I came from, God? Do you know the hood that I came? Do you know where I live now, God?
Yeah.
He said, yeah, I know where you live. I know your family. I know this. I also know where you're heading. That's what the word says. Because you're still living in that fictitious mind of perfection, right? Thinking that it was your making of it, but I'm sovereign over your life. You plan all this out, but guess what? Everything that happened in the desert, everything that happened with you growing up, everything that happened with you coming back, everything that, you know, everything that you notice on the sidelines, understand his sovereignty and understand his providence of who God is. Understand, which I did. Now I have to make a decision. Who is your God? Do you trust in my word? Do you believe that everything that was written in inerrancy is true? That is his word. Do you believe that? I asked myself that question, and I answered it, and I said, yes. He says, if you do believe it, then follow me. Obey my commands. Feed my sheep. Tend to my sheep. I said, who are the sheep? Well, these little baseball players that are 15, 17, 16, 12 years old. I was like, shh, man, I'm a doctor. I said, I'm a doctor. Do you know how much money I used to make? So remember, it was making some money.
Mm-hmm.
I made some money.
Oh, you doctors make money. Money. Yeah.
I made some money. Yeah. I made some money, and I spent some money. And I said, God, you want me to disciple these little young homeschool baseball kids that were, I think, in middle school, and teach them how to pray, how to honor you, how to glorify you, teach them the Word of God, have Bible studies with them, have do all these things, be a reflection upon them as the light of the world, the Word onto them. It's like, he said, yeah. Yeah, that's what the Word says. Mm-hmm. You are to be that person that I've called you to do and be. Mm. And for those that are out there watching this, this story here, I mean, there's as you know, people that have these memories, they can only go so deep. And so I feel I'm doing this disservice to everyone when we talk about everything that goes, because
yeah.
You can't, but I can.
Well, can I just say one thing?
Yeah.
Of all the things that you said, I mean, we've been talking for a while. You do a really good job of emphasizing your passion. When you're preaching, it comes out, it shows. So I don't think even if we're not getting into as in-depth as I know that we can get, when you speak, when you're talking about the Word, it comes out. And I think that's – I know that they're going to hear that. So
yeah. Well, you know what's – think about – And this is that's a great, great point. Think about what happened to Lazarus when he was awakened. What happened? He inhaled. What type of passion? Or did he just go, right?
Yeah.
That's the type of life we must live as Christians, no matter what's your platform. And so if you can carry that same passion in life for truth, it's worth dying for.
Hmm.
And everything you do is worth bearing your cross for. You must take up that same cross with passion and go. You must. And the kids, remember they were in middle school, 12, 13 years old? If they don't see that passion in you for not the game of baseball, they see your passion for the Lord, because they can tell, they can sniff it out. They can sniff out quick. They'll say he's just going through the motions as a coach, and he calls himself a Christian. If he says, we don't play baseball on Sundays, gentlemen, that means we don't play baseball on Sunday. Well, guess what happened that season? We went undefeated. Except for the one game we didn't play on a Sunday, we had to forfeit. And I told the kids, hey, guess what, guys? We're undefeated. But I have some bad news. We have to forfeit our last game because it's on a Sunday. Kids are like, yeah!
It's a badge of honor.
Yeah.
It's a badge of honor.
But, you see, and the kids, 12 and 13 years old, they were at my house doing their own Bible studies throughout the course of we were doing. Just revealed himself in a way. He says, now you see why I've called you. Now you look back and says, yeah, it's not about you. Watch this. It's not about you. I didn't select you as an exceptional baseball player, basketball player, exceptional doctor, or exceptional whomever. I called somebody who was a no-name guy who made famous the name Jesus Christ in the lives of these kids.
Mm.
Before, the kids were famous or thought famously about themselves. They thought famous things about the game, their idols. I mean, there are a lot of big idols in the game today. There are a lot of idols on TV. But what name became the name that was prominent in their lives? Jesus Christ. What name did they say, let's get together and have a Bible study, and we want to share our hearts and what we're dealing with as 12 and 13-year-olds about things that are going on in our lives? What are the things? What are they? So it was, now God said, you see why I chose you to be the one to do a sports ministry. To do sports ministry. Why? And it clicked. I said, wow. Now I need you to walk away from everything. Walk away from your title as doctor. Walk away from your title as dad. Walk away from your title as being this type of man, your heritage, all the identities that of you being a perfect guy, being a soldier, being all these things that I have, like, for anyone that knows about curriculum vitae's, CVs. So it's like a resume. Resume is like 1 to 2 pages. My CV is packed with, I think, like 15 pages.
Jeez.
Credits, everything. It's my life history of everything you do. And it's kind of like one of the expectations you do when you go to that level of academic training. You have a CV, which goes like about 12, 15 pages.
Man.
And basically, I had to burn it all. I had to burn it all.
I would imagine on some level that had to be a little bit freeing. Some level, right?
The most people, when I say this, somebody say, okay, this guy really got excited now. I was liberated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wasn't beheld to that guy anymore. I was grafted into my Savior. I was, who are you? I'm a Christian. My name is Kyle. That was the immediate identity. Now, what happens with that is application of that. So God clearly saw in me something that I did not. And with that, he saw in me the brokenness, which was needed, but he had to further break me down. Further. To get out of me what was going to be glorified. And that was the name of his son. He had to. But he says, I said, why me?
Because he trusted you. He trusted you. He trusts you.
Guy. I'm not a trustworthy guy.
I trust you.
I am the guy from this part of the neighborhood. I'm the guy who had evil on his heart. God, are you sure it's the right God?
You're safe.